Oh my God, let me start all this over.
Okay, go.
No, no, we're good. Keep the recording going.
Oh, okay.
All right. Yeah,
good. Oh, God's sake.
Yeah.
So what am I supposed to do?
Nothing. Okay. I'll just pick up.
This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 28, where we'll talk about the latest cloud news, plans for the podcast, and listener interaction. Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show.
How's it going, man?
To stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft Cloud world, including Windows Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, Exchange, Link, and related technologies. Just the information, no marketing, no BS. I'm Chris Johnson.
And I'm Andrew Call.
And we're just two dudes telling you how we see it. Good morning, AC.
Yeah, man, things are good. Things are definitely going good. Been working on a few projects, and including our little startup curve in the last few weeks. It's just same old, same old. Just work stuff here and there. So how about yourself?
Oh, well, you know... I had one question for you. Was May the 4th with you?
May the 4th was definitely with me. Definitely with
Excellent.
Me.
Excellent. Yeah. Excellent. I was trying to sneak in Star Wars jokes all around the all around the house yesterday, but my wife wasn't that amused.
Yeah, I was getting the rolling of the eyes. My wife is sick right now, so she's like, really, again? And then she's going through other stuff, and then she goes, I did it again today, and she says, oh, no. I guess today we're recording on May the 5th, on Monday, May the 5th. And she's like, yeah, it's not Star Wars anymore. Today's Cinco de Mayo. And I'm like, oh, that's right. And tomorrow, if we have too much to drink tonight, then tomorrow turns into Revenge of the Sixth. I got another eye rolling.
Oh, dear. It's a shocker.
She didn't think it was very funny at all. She just kind of looked at me. She's like, really, again? And I'm like, hey. And my son, of course, loves it. My daughter's like, that's so cool.
Nice.
She doesn't.
Yeah, care. I just like to sort of walk in the morning, sit down at breakfast, and then Vicky would be like, "How are you?" And I'd be like,
"You get the eye roll as much as I do, I guess."
Oh yeah, totally. Nice. So things are pretty good. Things are good. I'm absolutely flat out at work. It's crazy town. There's just lots and lots and lots going on. In the Microsoft world, and I'm going to Tech Ed next week, I think. Is it next week? God, I should know this. Yep, next week. So heading down to Houston, Texas for that. And so just getting ready, and we'll have a reasonable number of folks going down, so there'll be a bunch of speakers there and a bunch of sessions, and we'll have a booth and all that sort of stuff, and be talking to a whole lot of people. So yeah, it should be good.
Yeah, I should be preparing for Tech Ed, and I of course had a nasty little scheduling miscommunication that I was a good part of, that I was supposed to do a couple sessions, and now I had to bail out due to some family stuff that I had, and I think we just got wires crossed and stuff. So anybody's looking to see, I put a blog post up saying that I was going to be there, and now I will not be there, but the sessions are still going on with some really good speakers that are doing the same content. So
there's quite a few good sessions, but we will definitely miss you, and I'll have a beverage in your honor. How about that?
That sounds good. I definitely had a beverage when I realized how bad my scheduling mistake was. Anyway, I do have some really cool, like, firsthand news, I should say. So you recall the last month is when Google went through and they did their whole massive price cut. Then AWS said, okay, we're going to do our price cut on all of our services. And then Azure came back and said, oh yeah, well, us too.
Yep.
So I have two NAS devices at my house. One is, they're both QNAP devices. Mm. And they got about 22, 23 terabytes of storage in them. And so I've got a handful of the stuff that I do replicate to the cloud for backup. And
what you're trying to say is you got 23 terabytes of stuff you'll never look at again.
Yes. Actually, it's more like I have a handful of stuff that's all my music and everything, and then I have like 20 terabytes of movies.
Nice. Yeah.
That, for the copyright people, that I own, that I ripped for my own personal use.
Of course.
But the so the firmware on the devices, they can back up to AWS. So I use S3 for backing up some of this stuff. And usually my bill has been somewhere in the ballpark of about $75 a month. And after all these price wars with nothing that's changed, I didn't add or remove any data from this, just let the backups keep going. My monthly bill went from $76 the last 3 months to $26 because of the price cuts.
Wow.
And I mean,
that's a hell of a drop.
And that's not just AWS, right? That's, you know, Azure did the same thing. Google did the same thing. So that's reflective across all of them. But I put a comment on something on Facebook about it, and someone I keep saying, you know, this is the race to the bottom. And they said, you know, we're going to get to the point where in about 6 months, Microsoft and Amazon and Google will be paying us to put stuff on their cloud.
Well, maybe it will get to that point.
Yeah. Good stuff. So
there's a promo, right? There's a promo, a little promotional little hook. We'll pay you to put stuff on our cloud service. How about that?
There you go.
Beautiful. Yeah. Well, maybe I wouldn't rule it out.
I wouldn't either. The way things are going, I mean, you can't get much lower. So it's like, 50% price cut. I'm like, from 3 cents to a dollar to a penny and a half. Is it really getting that much better?
Oh, it's crazy, isn't it? And I think I've mentioned this a couple of times on the show. You know, being in this space, if you're not one of the big guys, you're done, right? Like, that's it. You can't get the economies of scale you need and the efficiencies across, you know, millions of customers to make it work. So it'll be interesting to see where this sort of plateaus, or if it ever plateaus, but it's only good for the consumers of these services, right? So it's exciting.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I guess that'll play into some of our news that we'll talk about too today.
Yeah, exactly. So should we move on and cover a few updates on what's been going on in the cloud world over the last week or so, and see where we go from there?
Absolutely.
Cool. So why don't you kick things off with some Azure news?
Sure. So Microsoft had a little bit of news that came out recently, and they're talking about they've introduced a new database tiering sizing. So they did this for the Azure website stuff about a month ago, and they were talking about it a lot at the Build conference. But in this case now, they used to have a business plan and a web plan and stuff like that for like 5 gigs or 50 gigs or 250 gigs. And what they've done is they've tweaked it a bit, and they've had the names. The naming goes along with the website. So we have a basic, standard, and a premium plan. They have the database sizing goes from 2 gigs to 250 gigs to 500 gigs between basic, standard, and premium. And the big thing that you're going to really see here is a lot of the backup and restore capabilities, as well as the disaster recovery stuff. So like for a basic plan, then you get a restore point to something within the last, it can do whatever the restore was. If you want to back up your database, then they're going to back it up once every 24 hours, and you can restore back to what that point was. You don't have much control over it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But going all the way up to premium, then you can do any kind of a restoration at any point within the last 35 days. So that's a big difference.
Wow. Yeah, that's huge.
As far as like the disaster recovery stuff, for basic, it'll restore to an alternate Azure region. So it's kind of between two different regions, but all the way up to premium, where you can do active geo replication up to 4 different readable replicas. So you've got a lot more flexibility in this. And it's, you know, the premium stuff is designed for mission critical stuff. The basic stuff is designed for, you know, things that are light transaction workloads.
Yeah.
And then the standard is kind of like your go-to option to kind of get going. So I'd say basic is kind of like your dev stuff, and standard is your where you would do entry for your core
entry
stuff.
For like production level stuff. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I think this is really good. The sort of the standardization on the whole basic, standard, and premium SKU model for these guys, because previously in the past, nobody really understood, at least anybody I spoke to, nobody really understood the difference between web and business versions of SQL. But they all know how SQL generally works on premises. And I think this model maps much better to that model.
I do too.
Right, where it's like, you know, basic is your dev box, right? And then standard is kind of like your entry-level IT-supplied SQL box. And then premium's like you know, you're geo-replicated, you know, with data replication and all that sort of stuff going on and a whole bunch of redundancy.
Mm.
And or at least standard is has geo-replication, except it's only, it's like a one passive replica or something. Is that right?
Yeah.
Something along those lines.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's, I think it maps much better to people's on-prem understanding of SQL. So I think that'll clarify things a ton.
Yeah, that, and it goes along too with the other names they're using, the other packaging they're using for other Azure services like websites. So
just, yeah, exactly.
Just standardize the names. It makes sense.
Yeah, if you build a basic website in Azure websites, then you go use the basic SKU of SQL.
Bingo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah.
So there's some more Azure stuff that we had. Do you want to talk a little bit about this new privacy update with the EU?
Yeah. No, it's of course the privacy thing is a huge topic in general, right? And this is not only just an EU thing, but you know, worldwide, lots of different countries and regions and all those sorts of things have different rules and regulations and laws that govern privacy. And so the whole cloud space is very, I guess, for want of a better word, and excuse the pun, up in the air about this at the moment, mm-hmm. right? Where people aren't quite sure whether, you know, the provider that they're using sort of adheres to their rules and their laws and their standards and all that sort of stuff. And so this week there was some news around Azure being the only cloud provider now that complies with this European Union privacy law, laws, I should say, that came out. And I sort of look at this as different cloud providers have, you know, statements they say around particular standards that they adhere to. And I sort of see that in the same bucket as the category of statement, right? So Azure will come out and say, you know, we comply with XYZ standard, which means that businesses that need to, you know, comply with a particular standard can bet on that cloud partner. And likewise, there are customers in the EU that need to know, hey, if I use this particular cloud provider, then I'm going to be adhering with all of the applicable laws in my region and that sort of thing. So I kind of see it in that same bucket.
Gotcha. Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's a nice update that they've done. And it's makes them stand out from all the other guys. So everybody's going to probably be rushing to get to that same point.
Well, this is the thing, right? We talked about storage costs, and that's kind of like a, like you said, a race to the bottom, right? Mm-hmm. It's a gigabyte. But actually, it's not entirely apples for apples. A gig is not necessarily just a gig, as we'll talk about in a second.
Mm.
But they're trying to differentiate on things like this, which is great, right? Because it's kind of the higher value stuff is like, does it comply with my local laws and does it comply with my standards that my industry needs to adhere to and things like that. So this stuff makes a big difference.
Agreed. Yeah, I totally agree.
It's the sort of the same thing when customers want to stick documents in, say, SharePoint Online or you know, name your favorite collab product in the cloud. Often they'll want to go, for various regulatory reasons, want to go see where their data sits. And so there are, you know, data center tours and things like that for these big customers that need to know where their data sits. And, you know, it's important to them. So,
oh, yeah, it is. It's a good move they made. It's a good move. I'm curious, now between the news that came out, I guess we talked about last time, where Azure is now the only cloud that has a fully exclusive China data center.
Yes.
I'll be curious to see where these other guys start going, because these are areas where they're not playing catch up in. They're kind of setting the bar. So let's see what AWS does when they come in. So it's nice to see them. Nice to see them not just be so reactive and actually jumping into this some of this stuff, being more proactive.
Yeah. No. Definitely. Like, yeah, China is a very interesting case, right? Because of you know, not just geographical boundaries, but geopolitical boundaries, right? So there's a lot to consider with that stuff.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, so I guess we'll see maybe more of this news, different regions and different areas of the world and all that sort of stuff as different cloud providers try to differentiate. And so it can only be goodness for the end user, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Nice. So Speaking of, a gigabyte is not quite the same as a gigabyte. Do you want to talk about the sort of the cloud storage infographic stuff that we saw come out and just talk about that a little?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So there was a company, and I'm gonna screw up their name, but I think it's Aptera is the name of the company. But they have an infographic that they posted, and we'll put this in the show notes, where they compared did like a benchmark testing between the storage performance and availability and error reports or error occurrence between all of the big guys. So what they did is they compared Azure, AWS, HP, Rackspace, and Google in no particular order. So what they did, let's look at the first talk a little bit about the performance, and they compared writing and reading. So as far as writing goes, they did two different...
Hold on, this is the Cloud Wars, right?
This is the Cloud Wars, yes.
Which is actually quite funny considering yesterday was May the 4th.
May the 4th. You know, so let's just go ahead. Let's just do another tangent really quick. So you know, Lego always does that, you know, May the 4th or May the 4th be with you. Can you, you know, you get special sales and deals and stuff. Did you see that this year?
No, I didn't see it.
Oh, right. You got to get on the list. So it's the big, the sand... what's it called?
Oh, yeah, the big crawler.
Yeah, the sand crawler. Yeah, so that's one that they did. And then... So for those of you who are listening to the podcast, CJ and I do this on Skype where we can see each other. Usually I go get something for May the 4th because they have a special minifig or something like that that's all about Star Wars. And so this year it's a special Sith Lord. And this year, my wife wouldn't let me get any Legos for May the 4th. And it's for a good reason. So first is that I had a friend, a couple weeks ago, I did a private class at the NASA Jet Propulsion Lab.
Oh, yeah.
And they are tag team with Caltech. And one of the guys in my class sent me an email and said, hey, just let you know that Mars Curiosity rover that sold out and is no longer available, Caltech just got a few in. So I was able to order it and get it quick.
Awesome.
It's on the way. But then there's another one that is a reason why I'm not allowed
to you got the F1 car. Love your work.
Huge. 58 centimeters long.
Oh, yeah. Jealous.
So she's jealous. There's a good reason why I'm not allowed to get another one.
Fair enough.
Okay.
Not that I say I completely agree, but...
No. I still could justify it. All right. So
back to the cloud.
Yeah, back to the cloud. So they did two different tests between writing and reading. And for the writing test, they did a test between writing 10K and 10 megs. And on the 10K, the speed is much better. And as far as they could write like 10K chunks, Azure was far and above faster than any of the other providers. They were twice as fast as AWS. AWS was faster than HP and Rackspace by a marginal bit, but it was tremendously fast. I'm looking at the graph and I'm having a hard time trying to count how many bars it is compared to Google's write speeds, but it looks like Google's write speeds are maybe like a tenth as fast as
Blue does. Yeah, it looks like it's 10K. Looks like it's the difference between about 7.5 megabytes per second for Azure and about... half a megabyte, does that look right?
Maybe
half a megabyte per second for Google at the other end of the scale.
And
what's interesting here is they've obviously, like, the different clouds are not equal, right? But they're all optimizing for slightly different things by the looks of it. And so in this case, right, in the first one, writing 10K, 10 kilobytes is by far and away, taken by Azure, both in reads and writes.
Yep.
But then Google on the right side is at the bottom of the graph. However, at the, you know, in the next measure that we'll talk about in a sec, they're kind of further up the stack. So they're obviously not optimizing for the 10K, write and read scenario quite like Azure is.
Yeah. And that was the other one you were talking about just there is when it's writing 10 megs, 10 meg files. And for this one, Rackspace and Google Rackspace, Google and Amazon were the top three. But there's not much of a differentiation between who's the fastest. Rackspace is by a little bit. Azure came in at in fourth place in this one, but they're only behind by, I'd say, about maybe, I shouldn't say only. They're behind by about 40%, 30 to 40%. Yeah. So not as fast. Now on the
read, only on the right scenario, yeah.
Yeah, on the write for 10 meg chunks instead of 10k chunks. Mm. On the read side though, Azure's just hands down against everybody else. They are twice as fast for small files, 10k files. They're twice as fast than all the other guys when you compare them to those guys.
Mm.
And on the 10 meg chunks, they're faster than everybody, twice as fast as Google, a little bit faster than Rackspace and AWS. So it's kind of hard to understand these graphs, but we're explaining them over audio. So there'll be a link in the show notes where you can go look at these. The other two that are worth pointing out here, and the last one is by far the most impressive one, but if we look at availability, it's average availability response time and the number of seconds. Google is quite slow compared to everybody else. They're about 2 seconds, followed by HP and Rackspace. But if you go back and look at Amazon compared to Microsoft, there's two things that I noticed with this. First, the measure was done over time. It was done over the course of November the 1st through November the 30th. And what you see is that Microsoft was the top performer in terms of read speeds or availability. But
it also looks like it was over. So November the 1st, 2012 to November the 30th, 2013.
I believe that's a typo.
Do you think that's a typo?
Yeah, I think it's just over 1 month instead of 1 year or 13 months.
Yeah, 13 months. Interesting.
But,
okay.
But regardless, I mean, what you see is that the Microsoft kind of trend across the whole month is almost completely flat. So it's very reliable. The speeds don't change. Amazon, for the first part of the month, was slower and they just kind of bumped around a little bit, and then they dipped down under when it got to be around the Thanksgiving, the holiday time. So, So Microsoft won on the availability side, but on the errors, so a measure by the percentage of read or write errors, obviously the lower the better. Microsoft.
This was stunning.
This was
really stunning.
Yeah. HP's got the. Go ahead.
I think we've actually spoken about something like this on the show in a previous episode as well, right? Where we looked at a different cloud report and similar results there as well.
Yeah, agree. Yeah, I think we have. And this one shows, and granted, the write errors, they're very, very small. They're like fractions of a percent. But for write errors, Microsoft, Google, and Amazon had zero errors for any errors that came in when they were trying to do a write operation. But for read operations, which, I mean, that seems like it's even a little bit more important, Microsoft is the only one that had zero errors. Over the course of the month. So between writing and reading, zero read-write errors on their cloud storage. That's pretty impressive.
That's incredible. Yeah. And I these percentages are pretty small numbers. Like we're talking, so percentage of read errors for Rackspace, which came in second place behind Microsoft 0%, was 0.0012%.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess what this really means is, you know, build in some retries in your code if you're doing millions of reads.
Yeah, you definitely want to do a little check. You don't want to assume that it's all there, but
exactly, yeah. Exactly. Now that is a pretty decent result. I'm actually pretty impressed by the small numbers all around in general. Actually, I was kind of surprised as well. Like, I would have thought there would have been more errors on writes in general than there would have been on reads, because you think reads are bread and butter, less complex. But for some reason, those have more errors or a higher error percentage rate other than Microsoft. So Rackspace, Amazon, Google, and HP versus their write percentages. So it's like, I would have thought it would have been the other way around if somebody had made me take a guess.
I agree. I felt the same way. It felt a little strange, but anyway.
Hmm.
There was another thing too before we move on that I noticed. Well, I guess it is moving on, but there's another thing that I noticed that AWS announced, and this is a cool for those of you who are on MSDN and you get the free kind of credits and everything working with Azure. It appears that AWS has done something similar. They have it the AWS free plan, and this is great for developers getting in. And just really quickly, I'll mention what this is. You just go to aws.amazon.com/free. And there's a bunch of things that you get for free with this, but let me just highlight the three most important things, or at least the three most common things I think people look for. And that's going to be around the compute, the storage, and the databases. So around compute, for most of our listeners, I'm assuming are going to be Windows-based people. But for EC2, their virtual machine service, they are giving you 750 hours per month of the Windows micro instance. So small VM, but 750 hours, it's not bad.
So that's that is basically a month.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, I think a month is around 720 or something like that.
Yep. So 750 hours of that. For storage, their S3 storage, you get 5 gigs for free, which is also going to cover 20,000 HTTP gets and 2,000 HTTP puts, so write operations. And then for their relational data, let's just, they have a lot of different options for data. I'm going to just talk about SQL Server. This actually applies to all of them. Their support for MySQL, SQL Server, and everything. But they will give you a free MicroDB, micro database, which is 750 gigs of space. 750 gig micro database and an additional 220 gigs of storage. So that's in terms of the traffic and the storage.
Gotcha.
So that's not bad for getting into it. I personally like the way that Microsoft switched it with Azure, where they give you credits, dollar credits, and then you can use however you want to see fit because...
Yeah, use them on anything you like, yeah.
Some projects may need one thing, some projects may need something else. So for trying out, that's much more appropriate.
Yeah, exactly. And then I think this... But either way, right, this is... These free tiers are great for people that want to build out an idea or, you know, a website or something like that, and just give it a shot without having to worry about the costs up front.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to get started, this is a huge, huge advantage or a nice benefit to be able to, you know, kick things off and get things up and running before you get too serious.
Agreed. Yeah. So I thought that was pretty cool. So
yeah, that's really interesting. That's great for devs and they're trying to compete for devs, mindshare. So it's great now they've both got a way to get in for little to no cost.
Absolutely. And speaking of throwing tons of storage space at the customer, do you want to talk about this OneDrive announcement that we saw last week?
Yeah. Again, we'll link off to a post on by Mary Jo Foley off in the show notes. But it's entitled Microsoft OneDrive for Business now offers 1 terabyte of cloud storage per user. So, last week there was, I think on 28th of April, there was a post entitled Thinking Outside the Box, by John Case from Microsoft, in which they announced an increase from the current, or what was current, 25 gigabytes per user for OneDrive for Business, up to 1 terabyte per user. And I'm pretty sure I fell off my chair when I first heard this was happening.
You're looking for a typo, right?
Are you sure you know what a TB is versus a GB? And a hell, why don't we just make it a PB?
Yeah. EB.
Yeah, no, 1 TB, terabyte, which is actually, you know, when you think about it, that's quite a lot.
Really? I don't have to think about it very much.
Especially when you go from 25 gigs, you know, up to 1 terabyte. That's a fairly large increase. So basically what this means is if you buy OneDrive for Business, and that comes as part of a number of different purchase offerings in Office 365. But you can also get it, you know, basically by itself. There's a SKU you can, if you're just interested in the storage, you can go and get that. But it's kind of similar to, you know, how many of these other file and storage providers work. You know, you get a folder on your machine and it syncs docs down and saves them up. And in the back end, it's really going into your OneDrive for Business location in Office 365. So it gets, you know, up into the cloud. It's basically backed by SharePoint for those, you know, it's all going into a document library effectively up in SharePoint. And so you can save all your docs up there and get access to them through the web or through your OneDrive for Business client applications or through the full Office client apps if you want as well. And you can go edit them in the web applications as well, edit and read capabilities in the web application. So if you just want to be browser based, you're all good there too.
That's nuts. 1 terabyte is just crazy because now it's I'm primarily on OS X, and so there's no client for OS X yet. That's coming out later this year, I understand.
Hmm.
But the first thing I saw was like, my laptop's got a 1 terabyte drive on it, and it's like, what are you going to put in the cloud? Now it's just like, ah, screw it. I'm just going to throw it all in there. I don't really care. Right? My first reaction to this when I saw it, and you know, it's always that's that 1 terabyte. That's amazing. I can put everything I want in there. But then of course, you know, after you get past the impressive part, you know, the pessimistic or the negative side of you looks in, and I'm like, God, if I bought a new laptop and I start sinking, that thing's going to take forever to pull all that crap down.
Yeah, you're going to fill up your hard drive if you fill it, right?
Yeah. Don't connect that thing.
Yeah, well, I guess the point here is, right, that it just takes away this concept of having to care about storage.
Yeah, yeah. I'm joking when I say that, right?
Even at 25 gig, you know, there are some people that have to worry about whether they're going to fill that up. Mm. Not me, but mm-hmm. I'm sure there are some. And so this really just takes storage, you know, takes the storage quota amounts just out of the equation when you're trying to compare two or more providers, right? And just like, okay, storage is done. Now let's compare value on top as opposed to the number of bytes you get to store.
Yeah, I was listening to another podcast talk about this recently, that it's not so much about syncing that much data down to your laptop. It's more that think about all of the applications now in the cloud that now have access to get to that data. That is your personal stuff that they can go through and analyze, if it's spreadsheets or, you know, massive data sets or whatever. It doesn't matter. But think about how you now have access to all of that stuff on your environment. It's really powerful. You can do a lot more. You could do so many more things with it. So it's very, very cool.
Well, would you mind if I sort of dive into my day job for a second?
Go for it.
So that sort of that does lead on fairly nicely to something that we're working on. In my day job at Microsoft, which is around all the APIs and sort of the developer programmability against these services in the cloud. And so for those who are using OneDrive for Business, there is a new set of preview APIs in Office 365 that mean that you can, it's called the Files API, and you can get access to your OneDrive for Business stuff. And you can do it in such a way that it's all nicely integrated with the auth flow of Office 365, and you can consume it through a series of REST services and integrate them with things like mobile applications or other web applications or desktop client applications. You know, you name it. You could give the, you know, say if you were building a mobile app that had something to do with photos, right, or documents, right, then you could integrate with the OneDrive for Business API and authenticate the user against their 365 subscription, and then save all the content, photos, documents off into that storage location in a nice kind of easy to consume API way.
Mm-hmm.
And we're starting to do things like put out some SDKs around it. So if you go up onto github.com/office-dev, there's a Android SDK for being able to assist with integration into apps on Android, for example. And then up on MSDN, there's documentation around all the REST calls you can make with it. So it makes it, basically, it's kind of like, the way I explain it is, it's kind of Office 365 services for applications, mm-hmm. right? It's not using Office 365 to deliver your app, you know, in terms of UI and user experience. But it's kind of powering your app behind the scenes with these services.
Yeah, and with the fact that we have things like, you know, search, and we have metadata and all that other stuff in there, I mean, it kind of just makes it to where 365 is more a provider of services, or 365 and SharePoint Online are a provider of services that your app can take advantage of, that you don't have to worry about building this stuff now. You can just leverage what's already there, provided you're connected.
Yeah, exactly. So. Exactly. And, you know, if it's, now we're talking about 1 terabyte of content, you can do some fairly interesting, you'll have some fairly interesting scenarios without ever having to worry that you're going to run out of storage.
Yeah, I think that's the big thing, is that I don't have to have, now I'm not so concerned about the amount of data that I'm going to be accessing now, because I know I've got this upper limit that is so far above and beyond of anything I'm going to be looking at from a user to user space. Then it's just like, I don't care. We're just going to put it out there.
So. Yeah, no, exactly.
Yeah.
So yeah, we'll link off to some, I'll drop a link in the show notes about where to find the APIs for that. if you're a developer and want to try playing around, connecting to it and pulling and pushing data to it.
Sounds good. Sounds good. Yeah. So before we kind of wrap this episode up here, I think we want to talk a little bit about the show itself, about the podcast itself. So
yeah.
I was looking at our stats and everything, and this is part, to all the listeners, we're specifically talking to you. So CJ and I, we love doing this podcast. But the one thing that we don't think that we have much of, and maybe that's part our fault, and maybe that's your fault. But maybe it's part our fault. But we're kind of grasping at straws here on how to resolve this. But there's not a lot of interaction between the listeners and between us. I mean, we did a couple questions and stuff. We had a bunch of questions submitted at the beginning of the show when we first couple episodes. But here we're recording episode number 28, and we've got one or two questions that have been submitted that we're waiting to approach those or address those when we have an episode that is more applicable to them. But we really want to get the listeners more involved. So apart from the submitting questions, apart from submitting ideas for episodes, right now the episodes that we're coming up with are really just coming straight from CJ and I, or from the news that happens. But, looking back at our stats from what people are actually listening to, we've had from our first show that we had back in October of 2013, right now it's early May of 2014, we're getting an average of about, anywhere from around 1,500 people downloading each one of our episodes. There's a handful of them that were really popular, part when we went on a pros and cons of Office 365 and episode 7, when you and I did our 2014 predictions with episode 11, the one where I think the two of us kind of went off the handle talking about OneDrive when the renaming happened, the storage wars. That's by far the most popular show. That was episode 15. But then there's some other shows that we did that were up there close to 2,000 downloads with when we interviewed Mark Anderson in episode 16 and such. So and also our build recap as well from a couple episodes ago. So I guess what I would ask just personally to everybody that's listening to the show is really just a couple things. First, if you have an idea for an episode, something that you want us to talk about, somebody you want us to interview, send it in. And the way you send all the stuff and the way you interact with us, you can send us an email. That's at the end of the show. We list out an email address you can use. You can go to our website at microsoftcloudshow.com and send a comment in. You can go to the actual episode itself and leave a comment on the episode on the site, or even jump on Twitter, MS Cloud Show, and send a comment that way. So send comments in, send episode ideas, episode requests in, send questions in. We want to have more of a dialogue with people of what's going on and what's going on in your day-to-day lives, and how can we provide more value to you with this podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. Like we did this for not so we could talk to ourselves constantly, although we do that a lot anyway.
Yeah.
but really to have a dialogue and interact with our listeners. And so we know we've got a lot of downloads. We know we've got people listening to the show. We've had that. We can see that from our usage statistics, but also from people coming up to us at shows and saying, "Hey, great show! It's great to meet you and in person as opposed to just listening to you in the car." And so there are folks listening, which is great. Obviously, that's really, really important to us and why we do this. But it would be also great to have a bit more of a dialogue and get a bit of two-way interaction going. So. I urge everybody to just take a minute. It doesn't take long. Just fire off a question or an idea that you have where you'd like to see us go. We'd really appreciate it, and I think it will help steer the podcast in a direction that our listeners want, and not just the direction we think it should go.
Yeah. Well, I want to make sure with the lack of. I guess that's my point is that I have ideas on where I'd like to go, and I think you're in the same boat. But when there's not much interaction coming from the listeners, it's one of those, we're saying these things, we're publishing these things, we see stats, people downloading it, but are you interested? Is this what you want? With no feedback coming back, it's kind of like presenting to, I teach classes, and when I teach in a hands-on environment, it's great because I can see when things are resonating, or when you present at a conference, I can see when things resonate with someone. But if you teach online in a webcast, you see a bunch of bodies, a bunch of people listed, you know, who's in the room with you. But if there's no interaction, you have no idea if they're even paying attention or if they just turned it on just to turn it on and just to show that they actually went to something. But I have no idea if you're actually enjoying it. Is this what you want? So
yeah, no, that's fair.
Even if you just leave a comment saying, yes, this is what I want, keep doing what you're doing, it's like, oh, well, okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Do appreciate
exactly.
It. It'd be,
yeah, exactly. We really do appreciate it. And it'll help steer the direction of the show, which is ultimately what we really want.
Yeah. Yeah. So
awesome. Okay. Well, so, yeah, if everybody could go take a minute or 30 seconds to go tweet us or email us or drop a line into the, you know, via the website, we'd love you to go do that. Thanks AC for jumping on the show this week. We covered off a bunch of interesting news, you know, OneDrive and Azure and AWS and that sort of thing. And, look forward to next week.
Absolutely.
Great. Thanks for listening.
If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or MP3 and provide a link so we can play your question on the show. You can subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find a full transcript and show notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. Oh, yeah.